The TSW Roundtable is a proud member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Follow at SW Commonwealth on Twitter and take your first steps into a larger world.
Hello there.
You want the bad news?
Roger, roger.
The Force, it's calling to you.
This is not going to go the way you think.
Now you will experience the full power of the dark side.
That's not how the Force works.
I need someone to show me my place in all this.
This is madness.
Let the past die. Kill it.
It's a trap!
Fulfill your destiny.
No!
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the TSW Roundtable. Once again, I am your moderator, Robert Cast, and we are continuing our retrospective series of all the Star Wars movies. And today, the much-anticipated Empire Strikes Back. But I'm not doing it alone. I have a couple of good friends with me here today to help me wade through the waters of this probably one of the most beloved movies of the franchise. But we'll get into that later in the pod. First, I'm going to introduce all the way from the UK, my good friend from the Retro Ink podcast, Adam. Say hi to everybody, Adam.
Hello there. And well, and it's an honor to be with both of you today.
Oh, yes. Well, I will introduce the other gentleman we're having on today, and no stranger to the roundtable, and probably if you're a fan of Talk Star Wars and all its podcasts, my co-host of the TSW Comics. Say hi, Tim.
What's going on, everybody? I'm sure you're tired of hearing me.
Well, no, and this is just one of those things where it's like I set out, I think last February, I put a list of all the Star Wars movies, and I said, okay, I'm doing a retrospective, which, by the way, I should say is copyrighted from the Nerd Room, an idea that I borrowed from Tim and the boys over at the Nerd Room, because they did a huge retrospective series on the MCU films leading up to Avengers Infinity War. Am I right, Tim?
Yeah, that's correct. We didn't quite finish it. We got two left, but
that's 20 movies now? 21?
Yeah, 22 as of the end of this next year.
Oh, wow. Fantastic. So basically, I went ahead and I asked him. I said, hey, I'm thinking of doing a Star Wars retrospective just to fill the gap between Solo and Episode 9. We knew we were going to have a little bit of a layoff of Star Wars stuff. Of course, we were completely wrong. We have a ton of Star Wars stuff coming down the pipe. So, but hey, we're knee deep into it now. So we're finishing this thing. Here we are at Episode 5, Empire. So thank you, Tim, for letting us dabble in. I wanted to make sure with you guys, you weren't going to do the Star Wars retrospective.
It's a little bit, it's within the sandbox, but I don't think we could offer the same amount that you're getting out of here with contributors from across the Star Wars Commonwealth giving to this retrospective series. So I'm looking forward to today, man. Empire, it's one of my favorites.
It is. It's one of everybody's favorites. So here we go. I'm just going to start it off. So I'll throw it to Adam. Empire Strikes Back. Where were you?
10-year-old boy. I was taken actually by a British actor who's on a British soap. He took me to the cinema to go and see it. And obviously, because we didn't have anything like internet, so it was the trailer that you'd have seen for another movie that popped up showing Empire Strikes Back. It was in the newspapers, the full page ads. So we went to the premiere, which was in London, the Dominion Theatre in London, the cinema, where they have all the premieres now, and watched it. And I think the most profound thing was coming away from the news that Luke's father was not somebody who was just a farm man. And that reveal was so massively huge, and it hit home so powerfully that it gave you a lot more questions. And I think that we were saying earlier that this movie had the same effect on us as kids and probably adults watching it as it did with people who were watching Episode 8.
Yeah,
it threw a curveball it was a much more arty movie, obviously, with Kirshner sort of filming this rather than Lucas. It had a very different feel, as Lucas was over, but literally just said to him, just do what you like and we'll do the rest of the effects. You just do what you do. I think it's a very cold film. I mean, certainly the first half an hour is all set in a very cold place. So it gives you a very sparse kind of feel for this galaxy. But, you know, I think the taglines at the very beginning of the title, where it says it's a dark time for the rebellion. And that's exactly where it's putting you in. You know, why is it a dark time? We've just seen the Death Star blow up. Mm-hmm. So what comes after this is really very exciting. And it really was a very powerful film. Still rates in everybody's list as their number one, but this is my number two of the entire Star Wars movies.
Fantastic. Yeah, and I don't know about Tim, because both Tim and I are Canadian. I don't know. We when they start the movie, this is a dark time for the rebellion, and they show up and they pan over to Hoth.
Looks like
and
home.
It, yeah. It looks like my backyard. I'm like, yeah. What's that bad?
What's so bad about this?
Yeah, exactly. So all right.
That's summer.
Yeah, exactly. That's a, you know, a nice September day.
Yeah. So, shorts, right?
Yeah. Tim, a little bit of perspective here, because I think you're 10 years my junior. So by the time Empire came out, like this I am your father was already revealed. Like, was this something you've just, let's just tell the folks where you were when you first saw this, and could you expand on maybe, did you already know about this Vader dad thing? Like, was it already part of your lexicon kind of thing?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. So I was not born yet when Empire came out.
Right.
And my first experience seeing this was somewhere between that original blue, purple, and even more purple box set and the special edition. Mm-hmm. So I saw this for the first time on VHS, and I did see it in theaters, but my memory is a bit fuzzy from when the special edition released in 1997 there. But my memory is a bit fuzzy as to exactly when I saw this. But the reveal of Vader was fully spoiled for me, not in the idea of how it happened, but the fact and just the overall saying. So when I saw it, it was full belief. Like, I didn't have that mystery to it that lasted another 3 years. I didn't experience it in the same way as a major reveal when you're sitting in the theater for the first time as a 12-year-old kid.
Right.
So for me, it's always been a bit more about the spectacle that Empire is and how dynamic the film is and how much work it does towards expanding the overall universe. It really changes things for me when it comes to Star Wars, because we get to see a whole new set of planets. The Battle of Hoth is my favorite battle in Star Wars. AT-AT's my favorite vehicles. And seeing how dynamic Vader is in this film, seeing Luke grow and doing something different, expanding the Force. So this film has always been, for me, is that big, expansive part of Star Wars. And even coming off the back end of A New Hope when I first saw that's a bit more of a personal film. And this one, to me, does all of the work in getting Star Wars and building up mystery and building up the universe. And so that's why I've always really loved Empire Strikes Back. We see Hoth, Dagobah, Cloud City, Lando Calrissian, everything. It's wild. And I absolutely, absolutely love this thing.
Yeah, I'm sure we're not going to try to make this an Empire love fest. But like, as Adam said, yeah, this ranks in every Star Wars fan at least top three. Like, I haven't heard anybody put it lower than three. Like, it's just one of those films. And what the point I was getting at with the reveal of Vader, it's almost like if you're watching The Sixth Sense with Bruce Willis and you just know the ending already. Like, if you're just born and then boom, it's just common knowledge, that's the ending. It's when we walked out of the theater, of course I was a kid, you mean, so I was able to, I wasn't at the drive-in at this time. No, I know everybody's curious. So I was at a regular movie theater with my parents. And when the reveal happened for me, it was like, oh, I can't believe this. Because when they were talking about Anakin, the offspring of Anakin Skywalker, and it was like, oh, that's clearly a different person. It never occurred to me as a, you know, I was seven, 8 years old. It never occurred to me thinking, oh, well, wait a minute. I mean, Darth Vader could be a title, could be a knighthood,
yeah.
if as it were. Like, it wasn't, it completely lost on me. So, but when the reveal hit, I was like, holy, like, this is unbelievable. Like this is, and also, too, I've been asked by other people, because nowadays when we see a reveal on screen, we always step back after and go online and go on social media and ask ourselves, are they being true, or are they kind of playing with words? Is he a father figure? Yeah. Is he? Because I was so young, and I'm sure Adam, you were the same, where it was just like whatever they said on the screen, that was gospel.
That's it, verbatim. Yeah, it is. Old Cordes, though, really goes to not just George but Lawrence Kasdan in writing this fantastic script. And really putting, something much, much deeper into the Star Wars universe that had only just 3 years before or so, you know, just given us almost like a pop film, A New Hope.
Yeah.
And then this came along. I mean, he relied very heavily on the first one being such a massive hit in order to give him the budget to do this one. And essentially the things that matter the most in this are things that actually didn't really cost a great deal of money. The father and son reveal, the Dagobah swamp, revealing what the Force really is.
Yeah.
The kind of, I suppose, Lando character, you know, being an old friend, but not really knowing, you know, really any background to him. You know, why wouldn't we think he was going to double cross him? We knew nothing of him.
Right.
Bounty hunters, epic space cruisers, and I think probably more importantly, a little green guy who became so profoundly important in Star Wars, and where all of that verbal context of what the Force is coming from, where George had come from with his teachings that he'd, or his teacher, his master, who taught him a lot of stuff on myths and legends.
Yeah, you look at it with Lawrence Kasdan actually writing this, you can see his fingerprints all over it. It takes that formula from A New Hope and just breaks it up. You know, how many movies do you have where you have your main characters split up doing different things, almost in two totally separate films?
Absolutely.
You've got Luke off doing his own thing, his own journey. You've got Han, Leia, and Chewie, and the droids over here. So it's was really cool how they're able to make what felt like two or three movies combined into one, but it still flowed very well. You're bringing back Obi-Wan from A New Hope in this Force Ghost. So you're introducing, like you said, Adam, a whole bunch of new Force elements to all of this, while also introducing a new figure to explain, give you the context, give you the exposition that you need to understand what's going on. So it's all about world building. In this one, where
friendships too.
Yeah,
because the first one, we got these bunch of characters that get thrown together to rescue a princess, and then in this we see the frustration that Han has with Leia. We see obviously the droids, but we see that actually after Hoth, where Luke flies away and the Falcon goes off, and they say we'll join back later on. You know, we'll get together later. And you've obviously Han rescued Luke out into the from the snow, and that bonds them together. There's a lot more bonding going on in this film. They come together as of individuals, but they really are much more of a family in this.
Well, I totally agree with you, and also too with the two stories you guys are mentioning. A lot of storytelling, a lot of times, especially in television, I know not so much movies, but they'll have an A plot and a B plot. Now, this is two things running at the same time, but it's not A and B. There's no lesser of the two. It's like A and A1 or A and A2. Like it's they're both integral to the movie. Normally they have, you'll see when we talk about B plots, they'll talk about a little side thing going on to lighten up the mood of a movie, right? That takes the edge off a seriousness of a story. But this is not, the Han Leia on the Falcon isn't lesser than Luke and Yoda on Dagobah. They're both just as integral and just as important, but important in completely different ways.
Yeah. I say you need that, though, in this film, because if the three of them are together, you can't individually develop them the same way that they do. You needed Luke to grow as a character, and putting him side by side Han, especially coming off the back end of A New Hope and how big Harrison Ford was and how big that character is, he overshadows Luke when they're together to a degree. And you needed Luke out there doing his own thing, growing as a character. And you needed Han to have someone like Leia opposing him and giving it back to him, because he can dominate the screen, but put him against Carrie Fisher, and they have good interplay there. That balances that character out, where Luke doesn't have the same effect with Han Solo as far as the balance, right? You want the people watching it to focus on Luke as being your hero, but you have a tendency to shift over to the charismatic Harrison Ford playing Han Solo when they're on screen together. So I thought it was really good to separate those two from a storytelling perspective, because it allowed you to grow individually and grow with those two characters.
Indeed, I totally agree with you there.
Yeah, and what I should have said this at the top of the show, but this is, if anybody's not familiar with our retrospectives, we're not doing a beat-by-beat breakdown of the movie, scene-by-scene. This is just three people coming together and just talking about a movie that they love. Or, you mean, and we've had retrospectives where people didn't like the movie so much, but we're on it to give a counterpoint of view. Like, this is, you know, so that's just what it's all about. So if someone's expecting, okay, next scene, three, act two, or whatever, like, no, that's not happening here. So now, something else I wanted to mention. This came out in a world where sequels weren't quite the thing they are today. You know, I think we had a Rocky II. Like, there wasn't, once the 80s hit, as soon as you had a hit movie, it was, okay, let's sign up sequel. Like, it was just an automatic. Sequels weren't an automatic thing back then. It was almost like you had your movies, and then they were done. So, like, for as far as sequels being, I think this is pretty much the most successful sequel, like, in movie history. Like, I'd be hard pressed. You can have a few up there. Mm. Like, I don't, you mean, but what else could rival? Like, as far, because whenever you see, especially with something the size of Star Wars or A New Hope to our younger listeners, like, that was so huge. How do you follow that? And then they bring this, which is completely different, but with all the same, like, it's hard to wrap your head around, especially in a time when sequels weren't an automatic. Like,
absolutely. We've done a retrospective on 1980 on the Retro Inc. podcast, and the majority of the films that came out in 1980 were all one-offs.
Yeah.
So thinking 1977, 78 for the UK for A New Hope, this coming out as a sequel was very new.
Right.
Very, very new. And I think, Rob, you've totally hit that. That actually, if you looked at every sequel that there's ever been to any major film, Empire beats it in terms of quality. Not necessarily in terms of bums on seats and financial gain.
Right.
But more importantly, I think, in terms of what has to be the greatest sequel of all time, Empire, but I mean, Toy Story 2, let's just put that there.
Of course, yeah.
is an amazing sequel to an incredible film. But it's not.
I think I found, I figured out what you're looking at. Toy Story 2 is great. This is not Star Wars 2. This is Empire Strikes Back. This is a complete different. When you say ESP, you know, like, you're lasered in on exactly what it is.
It features a lot of the same cast, but it's not the same story.
No, exactly. No. This isn't Rocky 2, or, you know, I mean, or even Rambo 2, like First Blood Part 2. Like, it's not. Everything has a 2 to it, and this is just it could pretty much be a standalone. Like, it's great.
You look at sequel crafting of if even the early 90s and all that, there's a real tendency to go back and redo the first film if you had success. And I'm sure there was that pull to say, let's put in very similar elements. Let's have our hero rise to the top. Let's have this villain that stands out, something new, something different. But let's keep the same beats going. Let's just remake this and try to generate that same interest and therefore generate the same cash.
And not to be
stupid. But this doesn't.
No, and not to be stupid. It's not like Breaking 2 Electric Boogaloo. Like, I know that's a funny reference everybody makes to every sequel. But that was literally, hey, we got a cool little hit. I remember seeing Breaking at the theater. This is not a Breaking podcast. but when the success it had, and it just caught a wave of breakdancing, and it was a thing in the 80s and this and that, and it was just, do it again. You know what I mean? And that's when sequels started, after Empire and after a few of them out there, you know, Godfather Part 2. Like, there's very few that were great, or you can hold next to the original, to the first movie.
You know, and like, I think what's important about Empire too is that, and in speaking to this idea of Star Wars too, that it's not that, is that this is the middle film in a trilogy, which is a new concept as well. This doesn't end on the note that even, say, A New Hope does. New Hope could be considered, if it was a one-off film, there is a reasonable ending. There's a little tease there with Vader floating off, but this thing more or less ends. You end with the medal ceremony, mm-hmm. then you jump into this. This is a second part in a three-part story. This isn't setting up and saying, okay, we'll finish off number two because maybe we'll get number three. This is telling a full story that doesn't end with this film. And so when you talk about sequel building back then, it didn't really exist for number two, but it didn't exist in a film sense for something this expansive that we're definitely doing number three. And here's your tease, because Han is gone. We've got all these new characters. You know, your main character gets defeated. You've got the success of the Empire in this. You're ending on quite a down note for films of that time. Mm. And so that's to me is the important part, is that it's not only not just a cut and paste repeat, but it's setting up for something even bigger and introducing elements like the Emperor, another mystery element to this. This is what this film does a lot. It introduces you to characters and different story elements that make you think, make you wonder. It gives you that, maybe that allure of what Star Wars is today about this headcanon. It leaves you so many dangling threads, and it just says, here you go. Think about this for 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. And again, that's, and hats off to George Lucas, because the two things he did when making Star Wars in his contract negotiation, he wanted merchandising rights and he wanted the right to make the sequels. He wanted the sequel. And they were, and at the time in the 70s, again, that's what we're trying to tell everybody, is like, it wasn't an automatic where it's like, yo, you can't have the sequel right. They were like, yeah, whatever. Oh, merchandising, yeah. Whatever. Like, so
imagine that now, like, people sign him for six films now.
Well, like, it's also imagine him finishing this cut and showing this to 20th Century Fox and going, and then thinking, well, hang on, you've just given us this fantastic story where it ends and it's got lots of vibrancy and everything else, and this is dark.
Yeah.
And has words in the on the back of the paperback, words like devastating and ferocious and destroying the Alliance and words like that, whereas it was all optimistic in the first one. And this is I mean, you also see Vader kill a lot of people in this too. I mean, he's strangling his own guys left, right and center. I mean, Ozzel gets it. I think Piet's the only one who survives, doesn't he?
Yeah.
But he's just, you know, he's really becoming this evil guy, that this evil father, which is what we now reflect on, how deep and how dark Anakin had actually got to at that point, how meddled with his mind had got. Because don't forget, you know, we just saw him become, at the end of Revenge of the Sith, become Vader. Mm-hmm. We saw very little, really, of Vader in A New Hope. Really very little.
Yeah.
You know? And then this, Vader is very prominent, as much as he is Yoda in this, because that final scene on with Luke is a pretty long scene.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They spend some time in Dagobah, but they spend some time together on that, you know, with the fight and the to-ing and fro-ing between the two of them.
Yeah.
I think it must have reflected a lot of what Lucas was going through in his own personal life, I think, perhaps.
Yeah, a little bit of turmoil there. And, you know, for me, with the Vader stuff, it's a good point there, Adam, is it gives you a nice juxtaposition to Yoda, too. You have kind of the light side Force user, and they're really expanding on the idea. They don't use the word Sith, but they're expanding on that portion of the Force with Vader. Vader, for me, in the first one, is pure visual. It's there to intimidate you. It's there to say, this is the villain. He's got this deep, dark voice. He's all in black. He's kind of scary. He's the one pursuing them. This is about expanding the character of Vader. Like you said, strangling his own men, the ruthless pursuit through the meteorite fields, basically not giving a care about anyone. We're going to chase these people down. And I like what they do with Vader. You have that dynamic fight between him and Luke. So it really goes a long way to push Vader to the forefront, who eventually becomes kind of the star of this whole franchise, right? They did three movies about this guy. And this is the film that introduces you to Vader as a character more so than Vader as kind of the antagonist, say, of A New Hope. You know, he's there, he has parts, but like you said, they're very narrowed down in A New Hope. I think it's great what he did, but this is about everyone. This is why I love this film, is that everyone gets a time to shine, and Vader included here. It's all about character development, pushing the narrative really far forward, and making sure that we have all of these elements in place for this final battle in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing about Empire 2, it's the, and I know it's probably because it's been around for so long, like we're, what, 38 years now? And it's so quotable, but you see a lot of big movies. Schwarzenegger does Hasta La Vista, or I'll Be Back, or you see Bruce Willis, Yippee-ki-yay, yada, yada, yada. You know what I mean? Like, you see a lot of things, but this movie here, I thought it smelled bad on the outside. I Am Your Father, I Love You, I Know, like what? Like, this is all stuff that everybody knows.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to be a Star Wars fan or an Empire fan, or like, just it's just part of our verbiage. You know what I mean? Like, it's left such a mark. So on that note, I'm going to flip it around the table again, and I'll go to you, Adam. I know it's going to be hard, but you got a favorite part? You got a favorite scene? You got something that, like, this is a
the tree. The tree, the cave, for me. I think as a kid, I think flying through the asteroid field was very exciting. Mm-hmm. I think the bounty hunters, I mean, from without going into any kind of toy talk, the first time... Yeah, the first time that this film really kind of became fascinating was the Boba Fett reveal. Send away for your mail away figure. So for me, seeing those bounty hunters on the ship, but I would say probably the most important thing was probably Dagobah for me. Yeah. And I think as a father, that has such a huge mind-blowing element to it, because Luke is very, very weak up to this point. He's almost belittling this green guy. You can't be any Jedi Master. Jedi Masters don't come like you. And he's very jovial, Yoda, at that particular time. So it's only when Yoda flips and becomes more serious does Luke take this serious. And then we hear Ben's voice. And I think it's the Yoda setting the whole thing up in the cave for Luke to go in there. Like, you know, you are what you take in there. Is, you know, what you take with you is what you take in there. So if he takes his blaster, he's going to expect to get violence, or he's going to get or retaliation, and resistance. And if he'd gone in there without any lightsabers and everything, he might have had a more peaceful passage of his understanding of the Force.
Right.
There is so much resilience there. The lifting of the X-wing. You know, he can lift some stones, no problem, but that's too big. So it's showing that his resistance to fully let go of who he thinks he is and become who he's supposed to be.
Yeah, and do you think, not to get off this movie, but you think that was mirrored in Last Jedi with Rey going into...
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Like, that's exactly what Rian Johnson
literally mirrored.
Literally, yeah.
Well, if you listen to the commentary to The Empire Strikes Back with George Lucas, he's constantly saying, you know, all my movies have reflections of what came before it. Mm-hmm. I just keep reflecting it time and time again, you know. And this is the important thing, I think, for him. Yep. Is that if you keep repeating, it becomes almost like a hypnotic thing, that you understand the mythos behind this film.
Yeah, he says it's like music. It's like same music, but different harmonics, different melodies. Like,
if we didn't have anything of John Williams's music in Rogue One, even just an element of it, it would have felt wrong, or in Solo. So from episode one right the way through, you have to have those basic chords and elements to the music, and otherwise it doesn't feel right. It's like you've got no foundation,
right?
And his films have to have that.
This is the first time we hear the Imperial March too, right?
Yeah, so there you go.
That's like
weird.
One of the most iconic.
Yeah,
yeah. Retrospectively, you're looking at A New Hope, and if you had told me 10 years ago that the Imperial March isn't A New Hope, I would have said, you're crazy. Of course it is.
Yeah.
Well, Yoda's theme as well is beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful piece of music.
Yeah, and also too, not, and while we're on, again, I'm going to keep bringing up other movies, but this is the quintessential sequel movie. You look at, it's everything, like you said, it's woven in, and you think that some pieces are, of course they were in Star Wars, but they weren't. It's like a Back to the Future too, when it's like, Marty, when you call him chicken, it sets him off. Right?
Yeah.
And they build it up to the point where it's like, oh, yeah, you can never call Marty chicken, except it's never mentioned in Back to the Future, the first one. But it's done in a way where it's like, oh, that's always been part of the thing. But in the movie making, they're like, no, they made us as viewers think, oh, this has always been a thing. And that's the same thing as Empire. This is, yeah, of course, the Imperial March. Of course, this is all, you mean, this is, we take it as, it's almost like the movie, George Lucas and Kirshner and everybody is tricking us to being like, yeah, you've always known this, but we didn't. You know what I mean? It's just, what an odd,
yeah.
You mean, I don't know.
Well, we have a tendency in the Nerd Room to refer to this as the Winter Soldier effect, is that it retroactively makes the previous film better by what they do in the storytelling they do in the second film.
Right.
It ties up a lot of elements. It brings in a new dynamic to what you saw before. And this has a real tendency to do that. Yeah, A New Hope is a fantastic film on its own, but now when you build in what they do and what they construct in Empire, it retroactively makes a lot of things in here better.
Yeah,
and it's not because the story's poor; it's just because, like in the Marvel universe, right? Everything is brought up by subsequent sequels because they're building a universe around this whole thing. You know, they're expanding on everything. So now you know a bit more about the Force. You go back and look what was done with Luke in the trench run, you're like, okay, there's something a bit more here. So it's building those big elements in, yeah, Star Wars, and they do a lot of work here to do that make A New Hope better. It recontextualizes a lot of things for me. And so that's why this is such, I keep saying it, but I keep coming back to the idea that this does so much work to make the whole universe better, bigger.
Exactly.
And it's, yeah.
And they make it so, and they even make mention in the commentary that the, when Luke takes off and Yoda does, no, there is another. Mm-hmm. And we all know now that that's Leia. Spoilers, if you haven't seen Jedi. Well, I don't know why you'd be listening to this, but neither here nor there. But it, basically, George Lucas was saying, you had to make Luke expendable. Mm-hmm. And what people don't realize now, as kids sitting in the theater, it worked. I mean, I'm not saying you can't enjoy Empire unless you saw it when it first came out. That's not what I'm saying. We're not gatekeeping here or anything like that. That's just, but we didn't. Oh, whoa, wow, there's a chance Luke could die. You mean like we don't? What he did throughout that story by adding in these little tidbits was amazing to keep us going throughout the movie. You know what I mean?
Go ahead. Yeah, oh yes. Oh yeah. Well, I was gonna say, well, one moment that is the awkward moment because of the third film.
Yes.
It's that kiss.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. And again, it throws you off because they didn't know. So
of course not.
So we didn't know. So it's like, oh, we totally believed everything. Like, so, okay. But back to, I'm going to flip it back to Tim. You got a favorite moment from this movie? You got a favorite? It could be anything.
Of course I do.
Go ahead.
You know, for me, it's always been about the Battle of Hoth. You know, we talked about this a little bit on the spotlight that we did a few weeks ago, Rob. And that battle for me is the quintessential battle for Star Wars. And it's not in space.
No, it's in Canada. It looks like our backyard in Canada.
Exactly. And the reason I love that is that, so you get thrown into the deep end of this film, you know, right away. We get introduced to all these new speeders and new stormtroopers. We've got Vader coming down to the surface. We've got AT-ATs, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
These are my favorite vehicles in Star Wars, and they're lumbering towards the rebellion. It's kind of this nice World War II. They're in the trenches. I say nice. I shouldn't say nice World War II, but it is a reflection of that being in the trenches, World War I guess more so. And it's everything that they do in that to kind of put their finger up at the world saying, you did everything in space because it's dark. Well, here, we're going to do all of this, and it's bright and it's white.
Yep.
And it's the battle in itself, when you've got the speeders tying the ropes around the legs, you've got Luke Skywalker popping that lightsaber open. And this is, again, you're seeing Luke Skywalker really develop and do something big. He is the catalyst for the actual win and for the rebellion surviving here, because he's able to put down a couple of these walkers. And it does a whole bunch with Han and Leia. It is so well done. And that's that for me. When I hear Empire, I see AT-ATs. I see the Battle of Hoth.
Yep.
I can't say enough good things about what that does. But it's funny because when I said it feels like several films, I often forget that you get Dagobah, you get Cloud City, you get all kinds of really crazy and dynamic things. Sorry, my daughter just crawled into my lap here. I'm trying to do this. And but yeah, it's the Battle of Hoth for me.
Yeah, and also too, not to make every collector cringe, but my buddy had an AT-AT, I had a snowspeeder, and we had, between the two of us, we had pretty much most of the vehicles and figures, because I think our parents got together and he got all Empire, I got all Rebellion. So there was no crossover, so we could actually, and yeah, we did take these in the snow. Sorry.
Yeah.
Like I took my X-Wing Luke and I put him in my snow speeder and I crashed him into the snow.
My Imperial TAC base, which is behind me here, has been spent many a time either on top of a white sheet or in the snow.
Yep, exactly.
I've got that exact piece behind me too.
That's awesome.
With the tiles, are your tiles on it?
No, I've just got I don't know, maybe it's not the same. I got the probe droid and it's got the turret.
Oh, yes, that's up here.
Oh, okay, that one. Yeah.
Yeah, so let me attach.
Yeah, for those obviously people listening can't see, but we're with
Visuals with Podcast.
Yes, Adam and Tim are huge collectors, and this is it's you're missing out because you can't see what they're showing.
If we are talking really though in terms of this particular element of Star Wars, where George himself, you know, he wanted to get the rights to the toys,
right,
and the merchandise. This was the best time.
Oh.
Yeah. Of all times I can think of being a boy of 10 years old, because we had, I mean, okay, so behind me I've got the Empire Strikes Back Millennium Falcon. I've got two AT-AT walkers here.
Yeah,
I've got the Rebel Transport. I've got a Slave One. I've got a Tauntaun box. Actually, I've got three Tauntauns. There's one in the box there. I've got the probe droid and turret set. I've got a snow speeder, and then there's all the little mini rigs, the stuff that was created just in case it was off scene.
I had the Dagobah.
So
like
much
the,
stuff.
The Dagobah set that came out where you can actually press the button on the side and the logs lifted and you can dunk R2 into the sponge.
That's there.
There he is. Yeah, he's right behind you.
Yes, very, very toyetic, eh, Empire?
Yes.
Yeah.
But
they learned.
Very much so. Whereas Episode 8 wasn't at all. I mean, you'd think because it has the same vein with where you've got The Force Awakens being a very, as I say, a very poppy kind of movie. Just pop, here it is. It's very bright, colourful. Yes, it has some dark moments. But The Last Jedi has a very similar vein to Empire.
Of course.
And yet, toy-wise,
what would you
there
make?
Wasn't anything.
What, would,
was
what,
there?
What new toy would you make from The Last Jedi? Would you make the sea cow? Like, I can't see that somewhere like Hot Kings. Like,
milking, like, action.
Yeah, milking action. Yeah. Like, I don't know what you're going to do
there. There was no real rebel base.
No.
There was the vehicles were either too big or, they, you know, we already had a Falcon. So,
yeah.
But there wasn't really anything in it. Those little speeders on The Last Jedi were not particularly great either.
Yeah. And the gorilla walkers, too, that they had at on the salt flats there, they were only in the film for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They should have been in the film way more, and maybe they couldn't. Like, I found that Rogue One used the AT-AT or that style of vehicle a little better than they did. This was just kind of a march towards
and
it.
Hasbro
could have been
did Hasbro actually make one of those?
No.
For,
there was I think there was one that...
There was one for
that
Rogue
AT-AT?
One. There was one for Rogue One. And there
that was the one that
And there was one by Lego, wasn't there? And that was it.
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
but
very
just,
poor.
And it just says more to the point, Adam, is with your set talking about the toys, like, it was like... It was yin and yang. We had Tatooine. Well, what's the opposite of Tatooine? Well, Hoth. You mean? Like, we had... I know a lot of it was done for the money, obviously. Like, because if you have new settings and new vehicles, that means more sales. Like, we were just talking about Last Jedi. What are you going to do? Make another Falcon for the eighth time? Not the eighth time, but for the fourth or fifth time? Like, it just... It was done in a way where... There was no spoiling. It was a sequel, which was almost unheard of. It had new, brand new set of toys. Like, you didn't, if you had the first, when you're kids and you had your toys and you were reenacting the scenes, you had Luke and his X-Wing, and what else could you do? Like, there was nothing aside from flying to Dagobah. You needed a whole new wave of stuff. Like,
Well, Vader's Imperial Death Star was one of my favorite pieces because you could get all your Boba, you could get your Boba Fett and your Bosk and your Zuckuss and Forlom on there, and set that whole thing up. And this thing could, you know, an IG-88, of course, and you could, you know, fly this thing to wherever you wanted it to go.
Yep.
You could, you know, there was so many ways you could create on your carpet, on your bed.
Yep.
Go out into the snow. You know, it was just. Yeah, it was a fantastic time for toys.
It was.
Really fantastic time for toys. And I think predominantly my collection is Empire-based. Even my hot toys are more hot, more Empire-based.
Well, just to round out the table here, I'm going to my favorite moment in the movie was, I think, probably because of the... I know, Adam, you're just a couple years older than I am, so just from that slight age difference at the time, me watching Luke and Vader go at it, in a lightsaber duel, which you expected to have. You had like the kid and the big bad, which this is something you thought would happen in Star Wars, the first movie. And now here you are waiting through what, 3 hours, 3.5 hours of film, and finally getting this moment where it's like, here's the farm boy Luke, our hero, versus the big, big bad.
Yeah.
And it doesn't end well. And it's what a fantastic, you know, it's not like, oh, he's just the chosen one, so he's going to have all the moves and win. Like, he flew by the seat of his pants to get the score of the win at the end of New Hope, but this one is like, no, he didn't get the better of Vader, and nor should he. You know what I mean? Like, he looks
like garbage after that fight.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I didn't do it personally, but I can't tell you how many... if you go around to Vinch's Toys, you'll find a lot of Dagobah Lukes with in their Bespin fatigues with their hand chopped off. Because a lot of kids are like, oh, this is what happened. Click.
You know, that's
so
hilarious.
Yeah, so for me, it was what we were anticipating. It was a big buildup. Luke, it's a trap. Like, you knew it was happening, but he just couldn't help himself. And it ended appropriately, the way it should end. Yeah. You know, you had somebody who was apparently all powerful, and now once the reveal was made, we knew he was a Jedi. You mean they mentioned he fell and he killed Anakin, but now we had it all came together. So even excluding that, no, I am your father. It's what a great scene, and it ended the way it should have. Luke got his ass kicked.
It's wild that they went that way. I think even today, there's a tendency to protect your main protagonist quite a bit. Is you set up a bit of a barrier around them and say, this character is off limits. We want to have this character go through the series. Where they took this and they flipped it on its head and said, look, our main hero, he's not going to win this. Because, like you said, in A New Hope, it's a bit more of that formula where he's the one that destroys the Death Star. He gets the big win in the end. This year, they tear it all apart and all down.
Right.
And to me, that does way more for Luke than him defeating Vader in this moment would have done. You know, looking back on 40 years of filmmaking and the universe that's built around it, I think that is one of the more defining moments of Luke Skywalker as a character than any other one.
Yeah, well, yeah. Go ahead, Adam. You look like you're going to say something.
On a different note, I want to sort of really just talk about Bespin, because one of the things about Bespin that I love so much is just purely the colors in this film. It goes from the pure whites to the very dark of space for the asteroids. And talking of which, I'll go back to that point in a second.
Yeah.
And then we go to Cloud City, which has got these lovely pastels and oranges and light blues, and it's just very, very sort of 2001 A Space Odyssey looking.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go from to the dark orange of the carbonite area and the very dark bleakness of that. And this film really does, the textures of this film take you somewhere very, very interesting. From very dark to very light, and then from darkness within the light of that particular scene. And then obviously, the finishing where you're just like, we've got to go and find Han.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that left a lump in your throat because you just didn't know what happened to him.
Yep.
Not at all.
Yeah, so it's like you read my mind, Adam, because this is what I wanted to do just on kind of a one of the last turns around the table. Anything else in the movie that you loved, or even stuff that you didn't like, or something? Like, for me, and again, not to be that guy, but Hoth Leia is, Carrie Fisher is so stunning. And it just, it's like, I know, and again, this is not, yeah. I mean, because we're not doing the, oh, no, look at Leia in her Jabba Slayer outfit. No. Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, you have a beautiful woman who's buttoned up right up to her neck, but still.
Well, even like, in her Bespin fatigue, she looks beautiful in that dress.
Exactly. Like, just, wow.
Beautiful.
Like, just stunning. So, Tim, this movie, is there any other little tidbits around, stuff you like, stuff you know, even make you cringe? I know Han, the, well, fine, I'll see you in hell. It's like, whoa. Yeah. Well, like, on the Tauntaun, I'm like, that was a little overwritten. Like, you know what I mean? Other stuff, like Yoda chewing the food, like, when he's eating Luke's rations. That's awesome. I don't know why. It's like, he's, the way he's chewing down on that, you know, sausage or hot dog. I don't know what he's bringing in.
Yeah.
I do like Joviland Yoda.
Yes.
I guess a couple points here that I really enjoy is both the introduction of Lando Calrissian and Boba Fett in this film. It adds another layer of supporting cast and expands that mystery. And, you know, we've seen the expansion of Lando Calrissian both in comics and in film now. And Boba Fett, yeah, he's become kind of this huge character without really having much to do in either of the films. And I know presumably we're getting some allusion to that in The Mandalorian as well, coming up here soon. So it's those two characters that add to the dynamic of our original three, and then you add on Chewie and the droids here. But I love how they bring in those characters to add that new dynamic to Star Wars, to the big three. So we're giving new people the playoff of here. We're not sticking to that kind of original core. And Boba Fett, for me, you know, Slave One, the costume, the bounty hunters on the Star Destroyer, brilliant stuff. I have all the Black Series of those. That's one of my favorite scenes, iconic scenes. And these guys are in this film for 2 seconds. And how many action figures of Bossk is there out there? You know, like, this is what speaks to Star Wars so much in the idea that it's very toyetic and each moment is something big, because, you know, I've got the vintage collection of the bounty hunters. I've got the Black Series. I've got all kinds of stuff for characters that have seconds of screen time. So again, speaking to that toyetic nature of Star Wars. And I guess for one cringeworthy thing, C-3PO in this film, little much. he's meant to play kind of that, or bring a little lightheartedness, I guess, to what is inevitably a much darker film. But he is just way over the top to me. Not as far over the top as you get him in Attack of the Clones.
Oh, yeah.
But you're starting to get there. And pairing him with Chewbacca, it brings Chewbacca down just a little bit, because he's got this thing strapped to his back for, you know, a quarter of the film or whatever it is. So they constrain him a little bit more by giving him C-3PO to carry around. And that is probably the weakest part of this film, is that I feel with the introduction of characters like Lando Calrissian, you know, changing that dynamic between the individual main three, they had a hard time finding what to do with C-3PO.
Yeah.
He was a character that was in the original film. They wanted to do something with them. R2, they split those two up. I think you need to have them a bit more together, because you need that banter. You need that kind of R2 bringing down C-3PO.
Yeah.
And that interplay between the two to make C-3PO a bit more digestible. Where in this, it's like, okay, I'm good. Like,
yeah, and also,
well, Leia does switch him off in the Falcon.
Thankfully. Yeah. And also too, he holds him up. He falls behind on Hoth when they're trying to escape. He almost gets him caught. He ruined a very wonderful moment for between Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher. Like, there's a term for it, but we're not going to use it here on the PG show. So,
droid blocking.
So, I get it. Yeah, and again, I understand why it's there. Now, as a kid, it didn't hit me. Like, it didn't hit the ear so hard. It was like, well, Han and Leia kissed. Well, what more could happen? You know, I mean, that scene was over.
It's funny you say that, because I think to me that I like that tension break there. Like, you kind of need that for that, because what do you do after that scene, right? Either you cut it, like you cut there and zoom out and just do whatever, or you have that tension just like stripped down to its bare bones by C-3PO entering the room. I kind of like that part of it.
Yeah. Oh, I understand why it was done, but still.
Yeah.
Yeah, disappointing.
Finally, they get that moment back again, don't they? Later yeah. on, well, after he's just had his first lot of injections and
yeah.
they have their intimate moment. And no, obviously no Chewie at that point, and no 3PO at that point. But yeah, he's always been the most frustrating character throughout, always.
But needed. You know what I mean?
But needed.
Yeah, you know,
everyone is right.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, Adam, just things about the movie, just tidbits here and there. I know you mentioned Bespin. I know you love the Dagobah, but any other one-liners, whatever comes
to mind. Well, one of the things that always baffled me was why Slave One was hanging out in the trash at the moment when the Falcon is releasing from the Imperial cruiser. Like, why is it? What is he doing?
Do we get an answer for that in Attack of the Clones? In hindsight, because he's seen it done before, because Obi-Wan did it to his dad.
Yeah,
that's it.
So yeah. That's what I mean. Like that's, and we discussed Lucas mirroring. So but maybe
we're talking that, you know, Attack of the Clones wasn't even out.
Oh, of course, yeah. At first viewing,
it was those sort of things. Ozzel was always another one of these ones. I just thought, hang on a minute, he's given too much away here. Maybe he's a spy.
Yeah.
You know, he brought them too close, too soon. Oh, there's no base there. You know, we've had a look. There's nothing there. I used to think that he was a spy.
Right.
Interesting. I never thought of that.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's quite a thing if you think, if you just go into this film and think that, you know, he's a spy. He's a rebel spy.
Right.
But obviously that there's no reveal, but he's a rebel spy. And then you just watch his lines. He's like, no, we've tested that system. There's nothing there. And then again, he brought them too soon from light speed, obviously making the rebels very aware of him there. And he's like, you're a fool. Why would he do that unless he wanted the rebels to know that they were coming?
He was.
I really like that.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome.
There you go. New element.
Now we're going to have to watch it again.
The other thing, too, is that obviously being in the UK, the news was coming out that Dave Prowse was potentially the person that leaked the I am the father line. Oh. And this was by the Daily Mail newspaper, which is not known for its credibility when it comes to journalism, which actually I don't think anybody in the Star Wars universe actually believes it was anything to do with Dave Prowse. And but yeah, I think there's all these little key things that you find and found out through reading and reading the script and watching the film well into the sort of 900s. I mean, I think I'm in 980-ish times I've seen this film now. So it's just under 1,000. And you notice things all the time, little bits. Just, it took me, you know, again, it took me a while to realize that Boba Fett's armor was different from Empire to Return of the Jedi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
His gauntlets were different color. Again, you know, I've had this Cap II vintage vessel for a while. I didn't realize that was Bosk's ship. You know,
oh, wow.
I didn't really look at the boxes. You just sort of take them out of the box. And luckily, as a kid, I was a little bit on the spectrum at the time. So I kept everything. I kept all the boxes.
Fantastic.
So later on, you're just like, oh, Cap 2 is Bosk's ship. And so you wish that those things were in the film. You wish there was more little bits and pieces that came out in terms of the toy line to have been in this film. And there are little bits and pieces in this that you just think, that's a very odd thing when he's saying, I've done this deal. Don't try and change it, Lord Vader, and everything else. And you're like, well, what was the deal he did in the first place?
Yeah.
I've just done a deal to keep the Empire out of here. Well, what was that deal?
Yeah.
That would have been interesting.
That's what's awesome about Star Wars is that it makes you think. It plants those seeds, and there's never. I'm assuming when Lucas wrote this and when they're filming this, there's never any plan to pick up any of that.
No,
it's just no disintegrations. Okay, these people have a relationship.
Yes. Well,
what is he talking about? What kind of relationship do they have?
Oh, they're lost.
Well, that's part of Lucas's genius. He just like throws you into the universe. It's like, this is the Force. He doesn't explain it until later. Like, it's just, here's the universe. They don't do any setup. It's like they plop you right into Star Wars, right with, you mean, Vader getting on Leia's ship, and then away we go. And it seeds, like you said, it makes for questions later and makes for rewatchability. Like how?
It's a beautiful film, isn't it? It is a beautiful film to watch. It really is. It brings emotions that A New Hope didn't really bring.
Yeah.
Awesome. And it, like, with all those seeds in that, it makes you feel like the universe is way bigger.
Yeah.
Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but A New Hope felt a little smaller, like the universe itself, right? Yeah. But this just makes you think, like, this is huge. This is a Warren universe. This is something they've been in this state for decades.
Yep.
And having all these weird dynamic characters makes a huge difference as far as the perception of size of this. And that you don't have to have, you know, four characters that are really the pinnacle or the focus point of this whole universe. This is a much bigger universe with much more going on. And this gives you that full perception of that.
Absolutely.
This film itself. Yeah.
All right. So once more around the horn before we wrap it up, final thoughts on Empire. Adam, Tim, I'm going to throw it to you first.
Final thoughts. Well, this film in itself ranks as number one for me in Star Wars, followed closely by Rogue One. And I think for me, there's a lot of key things that are similar between those two films in the sense that it does a lot as far as the action goes. It does a lot for, at least from Rogue One to Empire. And Empire in itself, it's, like I said at the top, it's all about how it expands everything. It makes this, to me, a full universe. You know, as a comic book reader, as a fan of Marvel and all that, I love the idea of continuity building and showing the expansiveness and just these little hints and teases all over the place. This film does that tenfold. It gives us Yoda, Boba Fett, Lando Calrissian. It splits up our main characters and grows them more so than they could have ever done it if they're chasing the same thing. So, and then you get the reveal of the Emperor, and you've got Vader really becoming a prominent figure and really the mainstay villain in this. You know, they could have went some other way. And we did see this developed in the prequel trilogy where they kind of shifted focus around who the actual villain of each individual film was. This, they had this kind of long form storytelling, this bigger arc for Vader embedded in this film. And this is the film that really sets that up. So for me, it's all about what Empire has done for the universe. And because it's executed so well and it's so rewatchable and it feels like so many different movies layered together, it's, to me, it's just like the pinnacle of Star Wars filmmaking.
Yeah.
And it's the film that brought me into the universe. It's a film that brought me into toy collecting to a degree because of how big and different and, you know, the AT-AT and the characters introduced here. That's why Empire is my favorite film, is because it's what hooks me into this universe and what's kind of kept me and watching it grow over the course of, you know, 2 hours. It's unbelievable to watch how well unfolded this film goes. So yeah, number one for me for Star Wars.
Awesome. Well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to give my final thoughts, because after doing the New Hope retrospective, I know better than to follow Adam. So that's why I cut Tim off here. So I'm gonna let Adam have the last word on this retrospective. But for me, Empire, awesome. Again, in a time, I know a lot of it has to do with nostalgia, but again, don't take me for that. That's not gatekeeping. I was a kid and I loved Star Wars. I was such a young kid when Star Wars came out, and then this movie hits, and it was right at the perfect age. It was everything you wanted it to be, but it left so many questions, and the anticipation, especially with no social media and only schoolyard banter, and no, like, I was too young to subscribe to magazines or anything else that could have got me anything more as far as information. So I had to wait until 3 years until Return of the Jedi came out. Like, it was just the toys, the anticipation. In an era where sequels were not an automatic or even a thing, this set the bar and set it extraordinarily high for sequels. It's great as a standalone movie. It ends on a bummer. Like, it hits all the right notes. And for me, I know this is kind of a Empire love fest, and we wish we could have had a more divisive conversation. But you know what? Nowadays, this is December 2018. I think it's okay to have a non-divisive podcast about Star Wars.
Yeah.
And we have a little love fest for a change. So, yeah, for me, love it. I echo all of your statements, Tim, and I can't say enough about this movie. So, Adam, final thoughts on Empire.
Let's hear it.
In short, apart from A New Hope being my number one film of all time, Empire Strikes Back is from the adventures of Luke Skywalker, and this is exactly what this film gives you, further adventures of Luke Skywalker. Tim, you just summed it all up, mate. You just summed everything up. So what is there else to say? the greatest sequel of all time. In most people's eyes, it's the greatest movie of all time. And it deserves to be seen by our great-grandchildren.
Yep.
Absolutely. Awesome. Yeah. And again, I'm sure with all of us having kids, I made sure to sit down. I watched my oldest sit down and see that, no, I am your father moment. And you're not looking at the screen when that's going on. You're looking at your kid and you're watching their brains at the back of the wall from their head exploding. So guys, thank you so much for being on. Real quick,
you're very welcome.
One more time, Adam, where can the good people find you on the internets and your podcast and all that other good stuff?
Well, as a member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network, we are Retro Inc. Podcast with myself, Andy, and Jeremy. We have the Retro Inc. Facebook group. Also, we have Instagram, Twitter, and all the usual places. So it'd be great for new people to come and join us on the Retro Inc. Podcast page. Both Andy and myself are massive listeners of you guys at the Nerd Room. And I don't know if you hear us, you know, sucking up to you week after week, but we often do.
Yeah, I love what you guys are doing over there.
One of the things that we just do is we cover all the things that you're covering, as well as Star Wars and everything else in between, and retro gaming as well.
Fantastic. Tim?
You can find everything that myself and my cohorts at the Nerd Room do over at thenerdroom.net, as well as starwarscommonwealth.com. That's where you can find, too, everything, like Adam said, that everyone's doing in the Star Wars Commonwealth. And Twitter is where is best to get a hold of us. I'm at the NerdRM. We like to hang out there. Don't do Facebook too much anymore. If you want to get a hold of me, NerdRM on Twitter, and NerdRM at gmail.com if you're ever looking to fire a question our way. We release episodes every Thursday. And then you can also find me over on the TSW feed doing TSW Comics with Rob Cast once a month here. We got to find some time to record, because this Vader series is coming to an end here soon.
And also we got the new, I just picked up the new series coming up there.
Yeah, so, Age of series. Yeah, Qui-Gon and Darth Maul. So yeah, some exciting stuff to talk about there. So you can catch us hopefully before the end of the month here in December. It's a little tougher, but you'll be hearing Rob and I back together again at some point here in the not too distant future.
Awesome. And you can find myself. I am at Robert MM Cast on Twitter. I also do the Roman Podcast, which is a comedy adult show. Check it out if my buddy Roman and I, we just hang out and talk about weird headlines in a not appropriate for kids. But it's all in good fun. It's all lighthearted. So we have a good time over there. Again, with Tim on TSW Comics once a month, we break down what's going on in Star Wars comics. And also, too, if you are so inclined, Tim and I are going to make an appearance at the Celebration. Well, we're not going to be on a panel. We're not going to be on stage with Lucas and all them, but
we tried.
We will be there. So, America, the Redcoats are coming.
I'm going to have to be. I'm going to have to be messaging you guys when you're there, gang. Can you pick me up?
Yes.
Standing queue.
And again, I've talked about this before. I can't wait to see Tim walk the floor at this. I'll have to bring a wheelbarrow for his jaw, and also a special gloves to carry his credit card, because it'd be rather warm.
My wife's going to appreciate your presence. Tim, do you really need all of that?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, I do, Rob. Yes, I do.
Well, Tim, you very kindly picked me up an R5-D4 from the 40th anniversary collection. And there's still those things that, you know, we can just cannot get in this country. So, I think you might
we'll
be
definitely
getting
be in contact.
You might be getting a PM at that point.
Again, you can meet up with Tim and I and a bunch of other people from the Commonwealth. We're looking to have a great time down there. So we'd love to see you, and we'd love to, you know, shake hands and walk the floor and, you mean, break a little bread while pizza in the common area, I guess. Or believe me, the food
you
options.
Bruise, maybe?
Maybe, possibly. So, again, guys, thank you very much for joining me on the Empire Strikes Back retrospective. I can't wait. Look forward to, Return of the Jedi is next. And don't forget about my Spotlight edition.
Yes.
I've already had Ash from Skyhoppers. Tim has already taken part. Adam, we got to line something up. I got Kyle from Tumbling Saber. He's scheduled this week to do a recording. So we're hitting up.
Busy man.
He's a busy man. Yeah, he is. He's way busier.
Than you're a busy man.
I find time. So again, everyone, thank you for listening. And we'll see you next time. Later.